that hand crafty thing, I'm sort of crafty myself. My son-in-law, Eric, is an artist. And last year for Christmas, he gave me a carving knife and a lesson in carving. Now, it's not exactly new territory to me. When I was 17 years old, I crafted this. I made this gorilla for my mother. Okay, I made this gorilla and needed a gift to give to my mom for Christmas. Was glad when she gave it back to me several years later. But I made that out of soapstone. And this guy's heavy, and it's the first thing that I really crafted by myself. But when Eric gave me the carving knife, the first thing I ever carved out of wood was this little Santa ornament. I made that all by myself. And that inspired me. So my second effort in my life is to make this for my wife, Brenda. Cocoons and butterflies have become an important symbol in our home and in our family. What I like about this is the expression. To take something that is in my heart and to create something that you can see and you can touch and you can be a part of, that's a big deal to me. I especially like those artists that make something out of nothing. Let me show you a couple examples. When somebody can look at eggshells, at broken eggshells, and create a chicken out of that, or takes tin cans and shapes it into a skull. This picture of Samuel Clemens is actually a picture of buttons. And the fish there on the other side are made out of plastic bottles on the beach. And at nighttime, they have lights inside the bottles. It's just remarkable. But one of the most amazing things to me is an art form created by Tim Nobles and Sue Webster. This piece, these two pieces together, are called Nihilistic Optimistic. How they can take junk and shape it into a shadow and craft a shadow from nothing. I am so impressed, and I so don't get that, but I love it. It all begins with a vision. It all begins with the craftsman who looks at a piece of wood or looks at a stone and knows this is just the right piece to create whatever it is. The craftsman saw something. The craftsman looked into the wood, and amidst all of the other stuff going on, he began to shape. He began to create. I'm impressed with any artist that can take the ordinary and create something extraordinary. Do you know what I'm talking about there? At the Rhoda Batu's Church, one of our favorite verses is from Isaiah chapter 61, verse 3. It says, to all who mourn in Israel, he will give a crown of beauty for ashes, a joyous blessing instead of mourning, a festive praise instead of despair. I think it's a favorite to me because it speaks of hope in the midst of impossible. That is, there's this awful catastrophe. And amidst all of that awfulness, amidst the chaos, an artist said, I think I see something in there worth sharing with others. Right after we moved to Vancouver, it was soon after Mount St. Helens blew. And this glass ornament that hangs on our Christmas tree every year is because an artist took some of that volcanic ash and shaped it and created it. And out of the devastation, which at the time was still just piled in huge heaps alongside of the highways, he created something beautiful that we are able to share. God is the craftsman who transforms, who who renovates. He takes the ash and creates from it a crown of beauty. He takes impossible and breathes into impossibility a sense of hope. I want to invite you to not just enjoy Easter with Renovatus on Sunday nights, but for the next 3 weeks after this, we're going to pursue this idea of being handcrafted. The idea that God doesn't look into our hopeless situation and shrug his shoulders. Rather, he sees something in there. He has a vision. Not for a moment do I think this COVID-19 virus came from the hand of God, but absolutely, I believe that he's going to do something with this craziness that's happening all around the world right now. And I think there's going to be beauty from the ashes. I think something's going to happen. And I want to invite you to join us on this journey to maybe follow the craftsman. And so today on Easter, I want to share with you a story. It's a story that took place in the life of Jesus. It's in John chapter 11 in the Gospels. And it's a story that I called The Brother. Three adult siblings lived in the same village. They lived in the same house, and they loved Jesus. They supported his ministry. He was friends. They were close friends. That relationship was important to them. They not only supported what he was doing, but they believed. They followed. And so when the brother got sick, the sisters responded. They responded to Jesus always. One sister was impassioned about serving Jesus, and she worked, and she did things, and she made sacrifices. The other sister was impassioned about learning from Jesus, and she sat at his feet. As a matter of fact, that sister is another great Jesus story where she was one that came to the feet of Jesus and anointed him with her own tears and wiped his dirty feet with hair that she unpinned. Her love was great. She was healed by the presence of Jesus. And it was that aspect, that truth about Jesus, that he was a healer, that gave them hope. When the brother got sick, they responded by sending a message to Jesus. He wasn't in the area, but they got a message to him saying, "Your friend, Lazarus, he's sick. Please, please come." They trusted the craftsman. Jesus looked at his friends around and he said, "Lazarus is sick, but this sickness will not end in death." And then Christ's behavior got confusing to them, got odd. It wasn't right. That is, he didn't respond with any sense of urgency. There was no immediacy. As a matter of fact, his friends packed up to go, and Jesus wasn't leaving, and so they sat back down because they trusted the craftsman. Jesus' behavior went on for days. It's not that he wasn't concerned. It's that the craftsman saw something. There was something important that he wanted those around to see. And so they waited. There came a point at which Jesus' friend said, "When we go to their village, when we go to Bethany, we need to be careful because we're going to have to travel through a region where you've received lots of death threats. We're going to have to go through Judea, and it's dangerous." Jesus mentions to them that Lazarus was asleep. And they were relieved. They now understood his slowness in responding. "Oh, well, if he's asleep, then he's going to wake up." And Jesus said, "No, he's not asleep. Lazarus is dead. They're so confused, but they trusted that the craftsman saw something that they couldn't see. And so they trusted and followed his lead. And finally, they began to travel. They came to the town of Bethany. And when they arrived, Jesus didn't enter the village. He sent a message, and one of the sisters, Martha, came out. And her eyes welled with tears, and she said, "If you had been here, our brother wouldn't have died." The craftsman saw something, and he whispers to Martha, he said, "He's going to raise again." And Martha, she understood. She said, "Well, I know he's going to raise again," because she knew his teaching. She knew that Jesus had always spoke about resurrection. She said, "I know on the day of resurrection, he'll be back." And Jesus, in very clear tones, said, "I am the resurrection." Even still, Jesus did not enter the village. So the other sibling, Mary, she comes out and she says to Jesus, "If you had only been here," you can tell the sisters have been comparing notes, have been talking about this a lot. "If Jesus were here, he would get better. If Jesus were here, he wouldn't be on the death's door. If Jesus were here, our brother would not have died." She said the words. And there came a point at which Jesus' heart was broken. Now, even though the craftsman knew what was going to happen, even though he could have been dismissive and saying, no, trust me, I've got a plan here. You don't need to be so sad. Jesus' heart was moved and he wept. As a matter of fact, John, as he tells this story, we sort of know this verse in John chapter 11 because it's the shortest verse in the Bible. Two words, Jesus wept. But I think it's an amazing punctuation of this great truth. As a matter of fact, the Greek word for wept doesn't say that he shed a tear. It means he sobbed deeply. It broke his heart. As a matter of fact, lots of people had followed Mary. They assumed that she was going to the gravesite. And so they followed her and they saw Jesus's response. And people responded in one of two ways. They either thought, "How much he loved Lazarus. Look at the tears." Others were incredulous, saying, "He heals everybody else, but he couldn't heal Lazarus." And they shook their heads. Those two responses, those are important. It's sort of helpful if we think in terms of, wait, how do I respond to Jesus's actions when I don't understand? I just have those moments. As a matter of fact, it was those responses that got a deeper response from Jesus. As a matter of fact, he was angry. He was enraged at their response. He goes from compassion and great tears to fury. And it's because he's been misunderstood. That makes me angry if I'm misunderstood, but it's not just a personal thing. It's that they didn't understand his purpose. They didn't understand his character. They didn't understand his identity. And that grieves Jesus. And so they take him to the gravesite. And he says, "Roll the stone away from the grave." And everybody pauses. And finally, one of the sisters breaks the silence and says, "Jesus, You're hesitating because he's been in there 4 days. She had to say to Jesus, there's going to be a stench. There's going to be a smell. But Jesus insisted. And they rolled the stone. And Jesus began to pray. And he began to pray loudly. And he thanked God for hearing him at this moment. As a matter of fact, he prayed about how much he believed in the Father. As you read John chapter 11, you're going to notice the word belief. It happens over and over. I think 7 times it appears. Belief is a big deal. And then he speaks the word, Lazarus, come out. And so he did. It's almost incidental to the story. And the dead body hears the voice of Jesus, and so he sits upright and comes out of the tomb. Lazarus wasn't the only one. A few minutes ago, you heard Luke mention that there was a little girl belonged to a guy named Jairus. She died. Jesus spoke to her, and she sat upright. Jesus was walking out of Jerusalem once and comes across a funeral procession and realizes there's a mom who's a widow who's burying her son. And so Jesus speaks the words and the son sits upright. Those people, anybody who Jesus raised from the dead, quite a testimony, quite a story they're going to have. Those are the only people that got to experience 2 funerals in their life. They would die again. But Easter's different. Like Luke said a few moments ago, when Jesus stepped out of the grave, he conquered death. It was this. You want to know why I'm telling a story about resurrection, but it doesn't have to do anything with Jesus? On Easter Sunday, I'm talking about these other people, but not the one. I'll tell you why. Because the craftsman saw something. What he saw in those previous deaths would carry on to this moment when his body was dead. Michelangelo Caravaggio did an amazing painting in 1601, 1602 called The Incredulity of St. Thomas. Would you look at that picture? It's just an imaginative, creative, awful painting. The drama of disbelief seems to have touched Caravaggio deeply, personally. Now, the story is this. When Jesus came back from the grave, he met with his friends again, but Thomas was not among them, and so he couldn't believe that Jesus was really back. He couldn't believe his friends, and he said, unless I touch the wounds, I can't believe. And so Jesus appeared later to Thomas and to the others, and that's what Caravaggio is picturing there. Thomas didn't see the Easter Jesus, so he wondered. And Thomas pushes his curiosity to the limits. In that painting, notice that Jesus is in the shadows. He's hard to see. He's the person who is least visible, least knowable. Notice that Thomas has his finger in the side of Jesus' wound. Notice that Jesus' hands are guiding Thomas' fingers to that place. I think that was the moment when Thomas said, my Lord and my God. It was then, as Jesus was able to deal with the expanse of Thomas's disbelief, lack of faith, fear, because the craftsman sees things amidst the chaos and the hurts and the wounds. We spiritualize Jesus' resurrection and we make it something a little bit cartoonish and bizarre, but the truth is, He sees something that he desires for us to see. He's crafting something. He's making something else. And so in that painting, Jesus takes the hands of Caravaggio and the hand of Thomas and the hand of Mary and Martha and Jairus and a widow who lost her boy and a pastor named Kevin. And he says, I can handle your unbelief. Easter is not just about past events. It's not about the death of Jesus only. And it's not just future events. It's not about me and Martha someday waiting for that day of resurrection, whatever that is going to be. But there's something present and here and now. So that now we say with Thomas, as we touch the wounds, as we deal with the reality of him stepping out of that grave, we come to this great reality where we are looking into the face of Jesus, even though it's darkened, even though we can't quite grasp it. And we say, my Lord and my God, we are the ones who try to deal with our disbelief in a variety of ways, and it comes out in some awkward moments, awkward in relationships, awkward in how we do spirituality. Oh, we're awkward. And I want to leave you with a final thought. I didn't quite finish the story. John 11, beginning at verse 34, says this. Jesus shouted, Lazarus, come out. And the dead man came out. And his hands and his feet were bound in grave clothes, and his face was wrapped in a head cloth. And Jesus told them, unwrap him. Let him go. So who are you? Who are you? Are you the person who is wrapped in the grave clothes? Are you bound and tied by a life that sort of ran out on you? Are you the one that needs some kind of release? Are you the one that is looking for somebody to do something to give you the freedom that is beating and pounding in your chest again? Do you need help with life? I just want to, if that's your story, if you're feeling bound up, I'm with all of my heart urge you to find a church, find a community, find somebody, some place where there's somebody who says, you need unwrapping. I'm going to be your best friend. That's what church is. We made church something bizarre and weird, but the truth is, we're just Jesus lovers that get together once in a while. So if you're wrapped up, if you're shuffling, if you're hopping, if you're bumping about, find somebody. Keep hopping until you find somebody. We're not made to do this alone. We are a resurrection community. And it could be, too, that you're an unwrapper. That is, you're the one standing there going, this is a miracle. I see life. Jesus brought life. And Jesus looks at you and says, unwrap them. If you are not living out your faith and speaking words that bring hope and peace and courage, he's looking at you going, do this thing. It's time. Beauty from ashes. How is it possible that he's going to shape a crown out of ashes? I know, it makes no sense. I understand it's absolutely impossible. How can anything beautiful come from such wanton destruction? And I'm telling you, he's doing it all the time, right and left. That's what Easter Sunday is. That's what we're celebrating. That's why we have hope. I want to urge you strongly, I'm going to push a little bit here, for you to come back next Sunday, because we're going to spend the next 3 weeks talking about stories where Jesus spoke a word touched a hole in a heart that crafted human beings into something beautiful. Because I think maybe that's what he has in mind for me and for you. God bless you. Thank you for joining us tonight. Happy Resurrection Day. I love you. Good night.